Good afternoon. So last time we talked about handling page and protection faults, meaning that, well, we had access to some memory that wasn't set up in a page table, or was set up in a page table, was marked as, for example, read-only or user, or not accessible in user mode, the processor is going to trigger an exception. It's going to ask the OS what to do. And sort of what we saw before is that it tells the OS that it's invalid, so the OS is going to kill the program. But the OS doesn't need to interpret it that way. The OS has told the processor that some memory is valid, and this doesn't need to be what it tells the programs it's running. It can tell the program it's running that that memory is valid, and when the processor says, no, it isn't, the OS can fix that problem. It can add something to the page table to make the memory work, return from that exception, and when it does so, we're going to be able to continue running the program, restarting that particular instruction. And that access should work the next time, assuming you set up the page table correctly. And we talked about two different things we could do as sort of operating system features based on this sort of pattern. So one was this idea of allocate on demand, that when a program asks to allocate memory, we don't need to actually add that memory to the page table right away. We can just tell the program, yes, I allocated your memory. Then the program's going to try to use that memory it thinks you allocated. And when it does so, then you can actually allocate it. And a reason why you might want to do this is that this is going to speed up, say, program startup. That to start the program, we don't need to allocate everything it needs. We just allocate the things it actually needs to start up, not to run everywhere. And sometimes the program's not going to actually use everything it allocates. We've had that example of like stack space. So we might just save work overall. We also talked about copy and write. When we were talking about fork earlier in the semester, we said, oh, it's going to copy the whole program. And that's going to include all of the program's memory. And that seems very wasteful, because a lot of the time when we're forking, we're going to fork, we're going to do a teeny little bit of work that isn't going to need most of that memory. And then we're going to replace the current program with something else. And if that's what we're doing, why should we bother sort of actually doing all this copying, except it seems like we didn't have an alternative. But we do now. Instead of actually making a copy, we can just mark everything as read-only and have the parent and child process share all the memory. And if they're only reading, there's no problem. They're only reading. You know, it's as if we made a full copy, because we can't tell the difference. If one of them writes, then we can actually do a copy. So just look, you know, we pretend we did a copy when we forked, but we actually do the copying later. When the program tries to modify their own copy, we actually make it so it's a copy and not something that's shared, so they can modify it without affecting the other process. And we're going to look at today, sort of first topic, some other things that operating systems can do, sort of taking advantage of this idea of, you know, we don't need to have everything allocated or set up in advance. We can fix up page table entries sort of on demand. So questions about things we covered last time? Yes? So the question is, on the quiz, we had an example where we had this region I said was coding constants that was read-only. And sort of how are we going to deal with this on fork? So if it's read-only, we want it to be the case if we're enforcing that. So one option is we're enforcing that it's read-only. It's not just logically read-only. In that case, we're going to have it not be writable in the page tables regardless of whether we forked, right? It's just going to be read-only all the time. And if we see an access to it from writing, and we got that exception, we're going to want to say, okay, what did the program do? Oh, it tried to overwrite its code. And I'm going to remember probably that I wasn't allowing that and not actually do the copy. If we weren't enforcing that it's really read-only, then we might actually do the copy on that write, which, but in the case of question three, we were just asking, based on this sort of access pattern I had here, what was actually copied, and executing code doesn't write things. Right? It would be really weird if executing instructions modified that instruction. That would make loops like a little tricky to write in assembly, so that's not what happens. So the question is, would writing to the coding constant scale the process? So usually when we say some memory is read-only, that's what will happen, yes. Okay. Other questions? Okay. So we went over sort of these allocate on demand, copy on write. I'm going to talk about another sort of trick that operating systems do. And this is something that Linux and POSIX supports. And this is, there's something called mmap. So here, I can open up a file. In this case, it's called somefile.dat. I'm opening it for reading and writing. And then I make this mmap call here. And I'll show you what the arguments in the dot, dot, dot are later. But I call this mmap with this open file. And I get a pointer. So there's some memory that I have a pointer to. And I can use this pointer to read from the file. So it's as if I, you know, read the file into my memory. So that doesn't seem very extraordinary. We can just do that. Like, we could implement that ourselves without a special function. I can also write to this memory, and it modifies the file right away. How does this work? We're going to talk about how this is implemented. And we'll learn that Linux, the way Linux manages a program's memory is it kind of treats it as being set up by a bunch of calls to this mmap function. That's sort of the unit at which it manages a process's memory is sort of as special cases of mmap calls. And we'll look at how that works in a second. Yes? Question, does this mmap take a file descriptor and returns an address? Yes. Question, why am I storing the address as a character pointer instead of an int pointer? So I'm treating the file as an array of characters, so I get a character pointer. I use the mmap's return value as a character pointer. If I wanted to treat it as an array of ints, I could use it as an int pointer instead. Other questions? Yeah?
Is the return value a virtual address?
Question, is the return value a virtual address? So virtual addresses are the only type of addresses we can access. So it must be a virtual address because we're dereferencing it without doing something really complicated. Yeah?
What is before the
file descriptor argument? We will talk about what goes in this. This dot, dot, dot is a placeholder. I'll show you what actually goes there in a second. And what is the zero? We'll see on the next slide that that is the offset from the beginning of the file to start mapping. Yes?
Why don't I have to dereference the pointer?
I do dereference this pointer. For example, this access here dereferences the pointer. If you you may remember that the way arrays work in C, that this is the same as doing data plus 6 and dereferencing that with the star operator. Does that answer your question? Okay, other questions? Okay, so here's the prototype for mmap, which is defined in the sysmman.h header. So it takes an address for which we'll mostly supply null. That's a hint. As to, which is a hint meaning that it's a preference about where you'd like it to load the file, but it might not use that. It takes a number of bytes to load into your memory, and an offset from in the file to start loading. And we have various ways we can load it. So one option we have is this prot, or protection bit, flags, which says, do I want to be able to read, write, or execute this thing I load? So execute is an option. It turns out that this is also going to be the mechanism by which we load like executable code from an executable on Linux. This is how it's going to be done, which is why that's an option. Okay, so we have our length bytes from a particular file descriptor starting at some offset. We also have this protection, and we have these flags. And these flags are ORed together a bunch of settings, but the two most important parts are that things are either shared or private. And these give us very different behavior. So a shared mapping is one which behaves the way I showed you on the previous slide. Changing the memory you're going to get is going to change the file, and changing the file is going to change that memory. This happens immediately. There's no like synchronize or write back operation. Like literally writing to that memory is going to change the file right away. And changing the file is going to change that memory right away. There's not going to be a delay. There's not going to have to be a read operation. It's just going to happen. There's another option, which is private, which makes a copy. But this is not going to be an immediate copy. Just like with forking, this is going to be a lazy copy. We're going to say, yes, I made a copy of that file's data. But what we're actually going to do in implementing this typically is we're going to give you read-only access to that. And when you try to write it, then we're going to make a copy. So this private mapping is going to be a copy on write copy. So it's going to be look like a copy to you, but it's really going to be implemented by copying as you try to write things. But otherwise, we're going to share it with the original version of the file. Yes? Question, is it exactly the same as the way fork handles memory? It is close to the same. So there's some differences in that if you have a private mapping of a file, and you modify like the file with write, you might see some of those changes, which wouldn't happen with fork, right? If I fork and the parent process modifies something, I won't see. It will never see it in the child. But this isn't. You're guaranteed that your changes no one else will see, but you might see some changes to the file that happen before you read it and after you map it. Other questions? Okay, so these are sort of the main flags, and these can also be ORed together with some other flags. In Linux, this is not a POSIX flag, this is a Linux-only flag, has an option map anonymous, which is going to come up a bunch in that this is how Linux manages memory in general. So sometimes we're going to want to map memory that doesn't have a file it corresponds to. And Linux supports that. So you can say, make up a file for me. I don't have a file to store this data, but I want to have, you know, a particular, all the protection flags and so on to be in it. But make a new file, pretend a file for me. And then I mentioned we have this address flag. So the address is a suggestion about where you would like the mapping to be placed as a virtual, what virtual address you want to be placed at. It is a suggestion. It's maybe ignored, and unless you specify a flag map fixed, which people very rarely do, but except in very special circumstances, it's not mandatory. So the OS can actually put the mapping wherever it finds room, wherever it wants to. And typically, you'll see calls passing null, just meaning, I don't care, choose for me. Find a place for it. Oh, and I should have unindented this. And the map function, you see it returns a virtual address. It returns the special constant map failed on failure, which is not the same as nil. Yes, that is a weird choice. Yes? Where would map fix be passed in? It would be passed in these flags here. So you can pass in something like map private ord with map anonymous and any other number of flags. Yes? The question, what I mean by where to put the mapping. So the mapping is going to have a virtual address. In some special cases, programs might want to select what virtual address that mapping is at. So an example of this is, let's say I'm loading an executable. The executable's instructions may assume they're loaded at a particular address. Mmap gives you a way to do that, to load it at a particular address if you really need to do that. In the default case, it will randomly select. In the default case, it probably won't randomly select it, but it will select an address using some default mechanism. Okay, other questions? Okay, so that's mmap. And we'll get to things about how this actually works in a bit. But first, let's talk about sort of the semantics from Bubble. So here I have some code that opens a file hello.txt. And I map it three different times. In this each case, I'm passing an address of null meaning. Choose where you want to place this mapping for me. I'm choosing, saying I want to map 3 bytes. It's going to churn out. I'm going to get a whole page map because I can't actually change less than a page of my memory in the OS. The first mapping is read, write, and shared. The second mapping is read, write, and private. Remember, private means copy and write copy. And the last mapping is read only and shared. And my question is, what are our possible outputs given what we're doing? Give you a minute, you can check with your neighbors, see if you agree. Question? What is %3s in printf? This means to print out a string that has 3 characters. So this is print 3-character string. It's a format for exactly three character string. Yes? Question, buffer is an array. How do I print it as a string? So in C, strings are arrays of characters, typically terminated by null. In this case, we don't actually care if there's a null because we're specifying the size. So printf is going to stop after 3 characters, even if there's no null. By null, I mean a \0, not a null pointer, because we can't put that in a count. Who would like more time? A couple people. Question?
If the protect option has a write and read, does that mean 5% is writable and readable?
Question, if the protection setting is read or write, does that mean it's readable and writable? Yes. That means, that I should say, that means the memory that's returned is readable or writable. Question? The question is, map shared, if we modify one thing, it will modify, it modifies the original file and sees modifications of the original file. Sorry? So, a question, I guess we'll get to it when we get to the answer of the question. So, who would like some more time still? Still working. Okay, so who thinks A? B? C? D? E? F? Okay, so we have pretty good consensus on D. So what happens here is this modification to P2 is a private copy. So we have P2 is a private copy, and we change it from, it was foo originally, and we change the second character to a B. So that's this X here. And then we modify shared copies. Modifying shared copies modifies the original file, and all the shared copies see that modification. The private copy, it's private, doesn't see it. So we change the last character to X, the second to last character to I, and this is in the original file. And that means when we read the file later on, we're going to see that change. And also, of course, it's going to be in the other shared copy we have, even though that's read-only, it's going to see that change. So that's how we got the answer there. Some questions? Yes? So the question is, what about if we had modified P3? So the question is, we can't modify P3. So we can't use the pointer that P3 to modify something. That doesn't mean that the thing P3 is letting us read can't be modified elsewhere. Other questions? Yes? Can I explain map anonymous? So map anonymous, we'll see some examples of that, which maybe will make it clearer. But basically, sometimes we want the behavior of mmap without an actual file to be read or written. But we want memory that behaves the way mmap's memory behaves. And that gives us, map anonymous is a way of doing that. Yes?
Without IO, how do you know how much memory to allocate?
Without IO, how do I know how much memory to allocate? I know how much memory to allocate because it's an argument to mmap. Yes?
So P3
because it's map shared, P3 gets shared to P1. P3 and P1 are both copies of the original file. Both see the original file, I should say. Not even copies. They're both the original file.
Why does P3 start with
foo? It does start. So question, why does P3 start with foo? P3 does start with foo. But changing P1 changes P3. But it doesn't change P2 because P2 is a private copy, which was copied on write when we modified P2. Yes?
Where are the flags stored? Like, so if P1 and P3 are both looking at the same memory and file, wouldn't they have the same like flags for the memory?
So the question is, where are the flags stored? So there's two places they're going to be stored. So one thing is that the way Linux, and probably most other Unix likes, track a program's memory is that they keep a list of mmapped regions. So for example, on Linux, there's a special file, there's a special directory called /proc, which has a pseudo directory for every process, and there's a special file for every process called maps, which is just dumping a data structure, which is a information that Linux has tracks with bookkeeping of maps, mmap calls, basically, that have been made for every process. So in this example, I'm running cat on its own maps, and we can see that there's a bunch of mmap calls which were made for cat. And with each of these entries, we track, for example, this first call will go through, we have the flags that are part of that kernel data structure that's being dumped here. So the other place that the flags are reflected, or flags and protection bits are reflected, is that when we implement this mapping, we're going to set page table entries. And for example, the page table entries we create for P3 are not going to be writable. Yes? Question, what's the difference between using read instead of mmap? So read is going to copy into this buffer, but it's going to be a copy at the time of the read. And because the buffer could be anywhere in memory, it could be like we've allocated the memory for that separately, the OS is not going to manage how to allocate that memory. It's not going to reflect the file if changes happen later. We would not want that to happen. It'd be really weird if you read from a file, then wrote to a file, and then the things you read changed. That's not how you expect read to behave. Other questions? Yes. Question, if one of the writes to P1 was at a different page, would that affect P2's memory? It's possible, but not required. So to make this example unambiguous, I made P2 the modification first, because, I mentioned that like the copy and write copy might not be made immediately. That's kind of just usually it doesn't matter when you're using map private, is why that is that way. Yes? Sorry?
Why is a void star address null?
Why is a void star address null? Why is the first parameter null? The first parameter is what virtual address we'd like the kernel to place this mapping at. And we're saying we have no preference. So we're just passing an address.
So when would you specify?
When you specify an address, if you had a reason that you wanted to add a particular virtual address, an example is if you're loading code that expects to be loaded at a particular address. Okay, so as I mentioned, the way Linux keeps track of a program's memory is basically as a list of mmap calls that either Linux made internally or that libraries and such made. So for example, this is a dump from my system of the mappings for cat running itself. And this is a sort of a file that exists for debugging that sort of reflects the contents of an internal kernel data structure. Unfortunately, there are no header labels, so let's talk about what's here. So the first column is saying that the virtual address that the mapping was assigned to. So when we call mmap, like it returns an address, this is the beginning of that virtual address plus the size. And you'll note that this is always in whole pages because we have to implement these mappings by changing page table entries, so we're always going to round them to whole pages. And we can see that this first mapping here, starting at address 400000, is readable and executable. Those are the protection flags. And is private, meaning that we don't care about seeing modifications to the file. And it starts at offset 0 of a file bin cat. So this is loading the executable code into memory. And the way Linux decided to do this is with mmap. And we'll find out that mmap does that sort of allocate on demand thing, which is sort of what we want to do to efficiently load the executable into memory. We also have some other information here. This is information we'll talk about when we talk about file systems. This is another way of identifying the file bin cat that's easy to use internally. So this is a first mapping here. It's as if when we started bin cat, we opened bin cat for reading and then called mmap with a particular target address and size to load the code. This is sort of how Linux loads a program. Part of it is going to be effectively looking at the executable and doing these mmap calls based on how the executable expects to be set. Yes?
So what direct effect does setting these protection flags have on the execution of the program?
Question, what effect does setting these protection flags here have on the execution of the program? So these protection flags are going to be how we're going to fill in the page table entries. So we're going to make sure our page table entries are marked as readable and executable because of these protection flags. Other questions? Yes?
What processes virtual addresses
correspond to? This is the cat program that is outputting this thing here. Question, when I'm executing this, it could be from another process. So this output is from the cat program for the cat program. If I want, I could get similar output for other programs, but this particular one is from the cat program. But the output would look similar for any other program, but obviously we wouldn't be loading bin cat, we'd be loading some other executable. Yes?
How many of these lines are generated by this cat?
How many of these lines are generated by this cat? All of them. Yes. Cat is a simple program, but it is not loaded in a simple way. Yes?
Can we tell the map settings from this image?
Can I tell the map settings from?
Can you tell if it is from map private or map shared?
Can I tell if it's map private or map shared? Yes, that's what this P means. It's private. Yeah? Why does it load the cat three times? So the second mapping is not executable. So Linux loaded the code as executable, but sort of the data that's not code as not executable. But we needed two separate mmap calls to do that. And then we loaded sort of global variable values as writable. We need a separate mmap call for that. Other questions? Okay, so we have these mappings. And the way we're going to implement these mappings with page tables is that when we call mmap, either from an actual call to mmap or one of these internal ones from like loading executable, we're going to say that we have some set of virtual pages in the program that are mapped to a file. And the page table initially, in sort of the simplest implementation, we would just leave it as all invalid. Then the program's going to try to access one of these pages. For example, maybe it tries to execute code on that page. That's going to trigger a page fault. When that page fault happens, we're going to find a copy of that file. And commonly, we're going to have cached copies of that file. So the file exists on disk or permanent storage, but we're going to keep copies of recently accessed parts of files in memory. And ideally, we're just going to point to that copy of the file. If the program accesses something that we don't have cached, we're going to do the work of cache bringing it into memory and then pointing to that cached copy. So here I'm only showing reads. We'll talk about writes later. And so you see here, we're sort of accomplishing that load on demand I alluded to earlier, that as cat executes, we'll load the pages of code it needs on demand. Sometimes we'll have the copy in memory already, maybe from another cat executing, and sometimes we'll load it from disk and then point the page table entry to it. Yes?
Does the map function also create the cache?
Does the map function also create the cache? The cache is something that's going to exist, so it'll be set up at boot, and we'll talk a lot more about how that works later. Yeah? Question, what's the difference between using mmap and using the map pages function? So the map pages function we talked about is doing the work of setting up these particular page table entries. That's what it does. Whereas mmap is doing something higher level, right? We have this one entry that we set up in our process control block that represents a lot of things we're going to do later with map pages based on page faults. Right? This is sort of a plan. This is not something we're telling the processor. This is a plan we have for how we're going to handle page faults what we're going to load at what location, versus map pages is setting up a particular page table entry in a particular way when we've already made all the individual page by page decisions. Does that answer your question? Okay. So that's sort of that first mapping. So we also mentioned we have this mapping in my example, which was, a read-write shared mapping. And that doesn't appear on the cat output because it turns out we don't actually use this much when executing normal programs, but this is what that might look like in that maps output. We have a read-write mapping that is S for shared. And the way this is going to work is going to be similar. We're going to have the mapping set up, and some parts of the file we're going to have in memory. And those we can have the mapping point to directly. Or maybe they don't point to now, but if we access them, we'll make them point there. But importantly, this cache data here is going to be the same data we use for read. And it's going to be the same data we use for write. And it's going to be the same data we use for any other shared mapping of the file. So this means that if I use this mapping that's shared to write to one of those pages, I'm going to modify this cache page. And that means if I read the file, it's going to read from this cache page. It also means that I'm promising that sometime when I stop deciding to hold this file in memory, I'm going to write out this cache page to disk. So it stays in the file even if we say shut down and reboot. So sort of the way that our shared mappings work is just that we just say, we're going to have one copy of the file that we keep in memory, and we're going to make sure that we use it for all the shared mappings and all our read and write calls. They're all going to use the same copy of the file at that same one physical page. And that's how you can achieve that effect that I modify, say, P1, that one shared mapping of the file, and I see it in P3, it's because they point to the same physical page. And I see it on reading because read is checking that same physical page. So questions about this? Yes.
So this example, where are they pointing the same physical page?
So in this example, where are they pointing the same physical page? So here, I'm only showing one mapping. But if we had a second mapping to the file, it would also point to these pages. Yes?
Can you just remind us exactly how, like, through what mechanism is mmap influencing the way in which map pages allocates memory?
Question is, through what mechanism is mmap influencing something like map pages, how map pages allocate memory? So map pages is a function we use implementing things like page fault handlers in this scenario, right? So when I'm doing the operation of setting up these mappings here, that is going to be done with something like map pages. It's going to be different in different OSs, the internals, but that's what the sort of operation map pages does. But that assumes that we've already chosen, the physical page, the virtual page, and mmap is handling all that sort of logic for us. And based on the flags, we're changing which physical pages we choose, and so on. Yes? So, question is, if you write and then this page gets freed, it's going to modify disk? Yes?
So, that's exactly when you have shared.
This is what question when we have shared? Yes. So, if it's private, the modifications are supposed to not appear in other programs, so it shouldn't modify disk. At least not direct, not in this one. Yes? So question, if it was private, well, it's not going to free up that memory. We'll show what it does in a bit. So if it's private, we don't want to change this copy because this is used by reading the file too. And if we have a private mapping, changing it should make a copy that is independent of everyone else. So we'll see what that looks like in a bit. So let's talk about private mappings. So cat, I mentioned, has this private mapping, which is probably global variables. So they map the initial values of the global variables, but they map it read-write because you can modify those global variables. And if you do, we run a private copy for every CAD executable, or not CAD executable, every CAD process, right? Each process should have its own global variables, even though the initial value might be loaded from the disk. So for this mapping, reads will work like we saw before. We'll have some cache copy of the original data in the CAD executable, the initial value of these global variables. And sometimes, some CAD will try to write to one of these global variables and try to change them from the default value. So in that case, each CAD process, each mapping, should have its own independent copy that's made. So we'll make a copy, we'll do copy on write, and make an independent copy of that data. This copy is not going to be part of the file, meaning that, you know, we're not going to be able to read it by reading the CAT executable. Other CAT processes aren't going to see that change to that global variable. It's only going to be in this private page here that we allocated because it was being modified. Yes? Can I use this to share information between processes? No, because each process is going to get their own private copy. So each process is going to have one of these mappings. They're going to have the same file data. So if we think of having like another process with a mapping, it's going to have like the same pages here, but if it makes a copy, we're going to give it its own independent copy if it writes. So a shared mapping, you could use to share information between processes, but these private ones, you can't. Yes?
When this copy of the file data is created, is it also created in the disk or just in the...
Question, when the copy of the file data is created, is also created in the disk? We'll talk about that later. Yes? Question, is there a place the copy is likely to be in process memory? So remember, the memory you can see in your program, those are virtual addresses. And likely, what virtual addresses are allocated doesn't depend on the type of mapping you make. It just, the typical way is that we just start at a particular place and start allocate the next chunk that's available. The physical, so it's kind of like the heap is probably the better analogy and how it's allocated. It's probably allocated like the heap. It's probably a good analogy. Yes? Can I go to the previous slide? The sharing? Yeah. So when I free the memory, does that mean I no longer read from the cache? So that means that if I access this file again, I'm going to need to load it from disk. And that's the same thing that happened here, right? We accessed something that wasn't cached, therefore we loaded it from disk and read it. And if it was modified, we'll load the modified version because we saved the modified version before freeing it. Why can't we? So, question: why do we need to free it? Because we might run out of memory. If we never run out of memory, indeed, we might never need to free it. Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
If there's no cache page, then we first have to read it in page?
Question, if there's no cache page, we first have to read it in, yes, because there's the original is on disk.
So how does the process of actually reading in page work?
How does the process of reading in the page work? Yeah. We'll talk about how we find out where to read it from when we talk about file systems more. But basically, a page fault will happen, and that will trigger the read. And when that read finishes, we'll resume the process after setting up the page table entry. Yes? Why don't we free at the end of the program? So if we're thinking of CAT, for example, a typical CAT program, it runs enough to output these lines, and then it's done. So if we freed up all that memory, then, well, we'd save some memory. But if I ran CAT again, it would have been useful not to have freed it, right? Because all that code I would have loaded, I could have in memory already. And so because of that, we'll typically try to keep things in memory even after programs have exited on the hope that it's going to be useful later. And a way of thinking about this is that if our choice is between freeing something and keeping something in memory is cheaper until we need more memory. And when we need more memory, well, then we can free it and we're basically paying the same cost. Other questions? Okay, so let's do a little exercise here. So let's say I've mapped foo.dat's first 64k at this range of virtual addresses. The program reads from a private copy, that is copy on write mapping, and then writes to a mapping. My question is, how many page faults happen? Or how many page or other exceptions? Protection faults if they aren't page faults. And also we're told that, you know, we've cached, for some reason we have part of the file in memory, but not all of it. Like some more time? People. Question? Sorry, is initially not been allocated, where the assumption in the question is that page table is filled in on demand only, so only in response to exceptions. Who'd like some more times? Bill? Okay, so who, let's see, who says two or less? Three? Okay, a couple people. Four? Five? Six? Seven or more? Okay, so we kind of have a split between like three and five and some with four. Seems like, so not consensus. So let's sort of draw out what happens here. So we have our file, we have address 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, the page number, virtual page number, and that's as far as in the file we access, even though we've mapped a bunch more of it, because this is the highest offset is here. And we also have this corresponds to part zero, page zero, page one, two, three, four, five of the file. And we know that initially, page three of the file and page five and six of the file are loaded in memory. If we think that this assumption here means that initially nothing is mapped, then our assumption would be that all the page table entries are invalid initially, and we need a page fault in order for us to fill them in. So under that assumption, we do this read here from page 13 through 15. So we're going to first try to access page 13. That's going to fill in this page. There's going to be sort of one page fault, sort of, and this is going to map the cached version. And if you thought, wait a moment, why would we not fill that in advance if it was already cached? Then maybe you'd say that the page fault wouldn't happen. That's not what I was trying to be very strict with this question, but a good observation is probably the OS should have filled that in advance because it's easy, or maybe it should have. But the assumption in the question is that it only gets filled in if we try to use it. So that gets filled in. It's very quick, but it has to get filled in. Then we access page 14. And that's going to be a page fault that triggers a load. And that load is going to be, so that's going to be an exception for the page fault. We're going to have to load this page into memory and set the page table entry to point to it. And some of you might say that there might be some extra exceptions to do the loading because of I/O, which I didn't account for very well. But at least we know we have a page fault for the load. Possibly there might be some extra work to do load it from the disk. And then we access page, so this is for VPN 14. And then for VPN 15, we have a page fault that doesn't do a load, where we just set up the mapping. Then we have our next part, which is the overwriting part. And remember, this is a private copy on write mapping here. So when we write to virtual page number 14, this is going to be mapped as read-only, and we're going to have to make a copy. I probably should use a different color. So on VPN 14, we're going to have a fourth sort of read-only fault. Well, because it's read-only, and we're going to have to make a new copy of this data that's private. And the same thing is going to happen for VPN 15. We're going to make a new copy. And so I get 5 page faults. That's my answer. And we could probably save 2 of the page faults if we made sure everything that was cached was already mapped, which is a real option, but it's not what I was assuming. So questions of how I came up with that answer? Yes?
Why do we need to do a load for page 14 but not for page 15?
Why do we need to do a load for page 14 but not 15? Because page 14 is this gap between what's cached. So it wasn't already loaded in memory, loaded from the disk. So if you think of our pictures earlier, page 14 would it be like here. Does that answer your question?
But those are like pages 3, 5, and 6, right?
Those are pages 3, 5, and 6 of the file, yes. And this says that pages 0 through 3 of the file and pages 5 through 6 of the file are cached, but page 4 is not. And so the question is page 14, not 4. So remember that virtual page 10 corresponds to byte 0, not byte 10,000. Yes?
And that load is considered part of the process of handling the page fault. There's never any associated additional faults associated with it.
Question is that load part of the handling the page fault? Yes. Is there never any additional associated faults? There may be additional exceptions for the IO.
We don't consider that.
So that's not another page fault, but it would be reasonable to say it's another exception. Yes? So how did I know that page 13 was going to map to this, the 3 through 3FF part of the range? Because I know the mapping here starts at virtual address 1000. That corresponds to 0. So if I add 300 to that, I get 300 as where it corresponds to, is 13000. Yes? Question, this is 0 through 0FFFF. This represents the bytes of the file. So these aren't physical addresses because we don't know what physical pages we put the file in, but they're where in the file on disk those bytes are.
We map virtual addresses to bytes.
Bytes of the, so the question is we map virtual addresses to, yeah, pages of the file. Other questions? Yeah. Question, those pages in the file, are those virtual addresses? So they are not virtual addresses because they don't use page tables or anything like that. We're going to figure out where they are using how the file system works because they're ultimately stored on disk. But like virtual addresses, we're going to have to do some sort of lookup to figure out where they're actually stored. Yes? When we load a file to memory, its page table entry is not set. That was the assumption we were making in this question. OSs have a choice about what they do about that. Okay. Other questions? Yeah. Why do I set the PTE for 4004FF? This is the these here are ranges offsets of the file, not virtual page ranges. Question is not actually cached in memory. So initially, this part of the file wasn't cached in memory, but in order to handle this read, we need to do it. We need to put it in memory. Yes?
It doesn't matter what our cached in memory.
Question, it doesn't matter what our cached in memory. It changes how we handle the page faults, but it doesn't affect the number of page faults. Yeah? Can I have a yes? What I did in pink, so for the, so that was handling the page fault for virtual page 14. We loaded a page, and then we pointed to it because we needed to handle reading from that page. So this was exactly what we saw back here, where we accessed a page, needed to load it, and then point to it. Other questions? Yes. How do we determine what type of mapping to set up? This is going to be done by people who call nmap, or when we load the program, there's going to be a particular pattern that's written in the executable to use. You have to be told. Here we were told it's private, copy and write. Yes. Question, if a program writes to something that's not cached, does it fault twice or once? That is an implementation decision. Probably you try to fault once, but you could fault twice, to once to bring it in and then try again, and oh, it's a write, and copy it. Okay. So we have some other memory that's in this CAD executable to talk about. So some one is that we have the heap here, and the heap is tracked like one of those mmaps, except it's one that doesn't correspond to a file. We see this output here for debugging, just labels it as a heap, but it doesn't correspond to any file. The file information here is all zeros, meaning sort of it doesn't, not a real file. And this is what that map anonymous is for. So rather than allocating the heap with, like with a special S break, we can just treat allocating things like heap as a special mmap call, where we're just mapping something that doesn't have a file. And there's some other regions of memory that are allocated this way in the CAD executable too. So how does this work? Well, we're going to have parts of the heap that are actually used are going to have some data allocated for them in memory. And when the program tries to access some more of the heap, we're going to make up some memory for it, probably filling it with zeros. like your allocate on demand in the paging assignment, and set up the mapping to point to it. Now, if we want to free up some memory from here, things have to be a little different than our file case. So in the case of having things that had files underlying them, if we wanted to free up that memory, we just said, oh, we'll just write it back to disk, if it modified, and we have a copy on disk. Here we don't, but what we'll do is we'll make it be a special case of a file on disk by, we'll just make some space on disk for it. And this is known as swapping out, so the heap here. So to avoid storing the heap in memory, we're gonna just move it to disk, we'll allocate some disk space for it. And sort of the assumption is that disk space is pretty much infinite, so we can allocate whatever space we need to do this, and this way we can sort of treat all memory just like cached file data. That if we want to get rid of it, we just write it back to disk. And you know, we're just, things that don't really have files, we'll just make up a file for them on disk as we need one. Which is basically what I did here, I just said, oh, don't have a file on disk, we'll just make one up and put the file there. And then we can temporarily store that on disk for that heap that's not being used for a while. Yes?
Do you have entries that point straight to memory locations? And also, are there physical addresses that are associated with cache locations in cache?
So question is, do we have entries that point straight to memory locations? You mean like here in the page table?
Yeah, something that instead of pointing from a page table to a cache location, points from a page table straight to a location.
Question, do I have something which points to a page table straight to a location in physical memory? That's all page table entries, right? If they're valid, they point to a location in physical memory. That was true in all our diagrams. What's in that location in physical memory varies. Sometimes it's parts of files, sometimes it's parts of the heap, but it always points to a physical memory location. What was the second part of your question?
Just that, do those entries, can those, does, is there something distinct between, like what's the
So the question is, how do I know it's part of a cache file versus part of a heap? That is bookkeeping the OS needs to do. And there's lots of options, but we have to maintain status structures to remember, how did I use this memory? And we're going to do that. Yes? So it's memory like a layer of cache, so that is sort of the idea behind this scheme? Yes. So that we're trying to treating memory as a cache for disk. We're not going to want to do that too often because disk is really slow. But that's sort of the idea behind the scheme. And it's most useful because we're caching files, which are actually something we care about keeping in memory, even though we do really want them stored on disk. Yes? Question, if there's no backing files, the memory meaning allocated. And so this diagram, stuff that has no backing file is not allocated until we need it. And so I sort of have this copy that's on disk, and later on, let's say the program tries to read from this memory, we're going to load it back from disk and set it up. Yes, question? So the question is, how do I like keep track of the location on disk? And that sort of information, we're going to have some data structures associated with the mapping to track that information. And how that happens between OSs varies. I might talk a little bit about how Linux does it, but we're mostly going to give a sort of a high-level view. There's lots of options, but we just need to remember somewhere, oh, the heap of this application is stored here. And we can use lots of data structures. We can like have a map, a hash table, or something like that to keep that information. Yeah. Question, if there's no backing file, what are we reading from? So when we need to allocate a new page, sort of the rule in Linux is going to be that we just allocate zeros rather than reading from a file. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Question, why does? Three X's?
Yeah.
Because I made an error on the slide. That's why the access should be there. They're just not being consistent. Okay. So let's let's go back to this idea of allocating space for something on disk and look at our copy on write case. So in our copy on write case, we modified part of a file and we had this private copy. Let's say we want to free up that memory. Well, if we want to free up memory, maybe the first thing we should do is free up the stuff that's cached that we have a copy of on disk already. But if we want to free up more memory, well, we're going to want a place to put that modified data. And this is something OSs will do. We'll allocate some space on disk for the private copy. So we can store it temporarily to free up memory. And later on, if the program tries to access it, we'll have to remember to get back that private copy and not go back to the original file. And ultimately, as someone alluded to, we're going to get to this idea that the page cache, what we call the page cache, that memory is going to be a cache for disk. And files and program memory are all going to have some place we can put them on disk. And therefore, our physical pages are going to be sort of temporarily kept disk data from faster storage. And temporarily in quotes because we don't want it to be very temporary. We want it to be most of the time are kept in memory. But you know, we always have this fallback. And we're going to talk about, we have this cache sort of idea that we see being implemented. And I sort of told you about the mechanics of, oh, here's how I set page table entries. Here's how I can move stuff from memory to disk to free up space. I can move stuff back when I need it. But we're going to talk about how to manage it intelligently. How do we choose? What stuff do we move from memory to disk? What stuff don't I do that with? And we'll look at how that works. And also what information we need to do bookkeeping on in order to manage this cache. Yes? That's what I just went over. Yes, your copy on write was a question. No, that was the previous slide. So what does this cache look like? So we have to keep track of some data structures. I have this daunting diagram, and I go with the simple parts. So our cache hit, we're going to have the program accessing something with a virtual address. It's going to use the page table to figure out where it is. If we're reading or writing a file, the OS is going to have some data structure that tracks where cache pages of the file are and tells what physical pages are used. So this is our cache hit case. Either we're accessing the file with a virtual address, in which case it uses the page table, or accessing it based on a location in the file, in which case the OS is going to have some data structure saying, here are the parts of bincat that I have kept in memory. So the cache hit, that data structure is determined by the hardware because the hardware handles this access. For the file read and write, we have a lot more flexibility because this is all kernel code. We can decide however we want to organize this information is fine because we are writing the code that handles the reads and writes, that handles the page faults that need to check what parts of the file are cached. And so we have some data structure that represents sort of you know, which of these boxes are filled and where are they stored in memory. So this is sort of talking about accessing cache stuff, but when stuff isn't cached, we need to bring it into memory. And we need to allocate pages. And I'm going to call the process of allocating pages page replacement. And that seems like a little confusing, right? Allocation isn't replacement. But we're going to kind of assume our common case is that we've used all of our physical memory. And why should that be our common case? Because ideally, we're going to try to make the best use of caching things to make it so we read and write disk less often, so things are faster. And so that means sort of our normal state should be that we've used all of memory to cache stuff, and that means if we want to allocate some more space, I need to uncache something. And therefore, allocating a new page is deciding what do I replace that I have cached now. So to do this page replacement process, my first step is I have to evict a page. I have to get rid of some cache data to free up a physical page. And sometimes this is going to be easy. Sometimes there's an unused page for some reason. But other times I'm going to need to figure out how to remove something that's in use. And then I need to load the data that is actually on disk in its place. I need to have a way of doing that. So one thing we're going to need is when we're doing page replacement, I need to load the new data. So I need to have some way of knowing where part of a file is on disk, or where part of an OS program's memory is kept on disk if we've swapped it out, or if it's part of a file. So in Linux, in all things, we'll talk about file systems later. So just for now, just take it as a given that we're going to have some way of saying, given file X, byte Y, we're going to have some way of finding it on disk. We'll talk about how we're going to do that later. There's a bunch of choices. For getting the virtual address there, the way Linux handles this is that if it's part of a file, we just look up what part of the file it's in from, and then use the file system data structure. If it's swapped out, Linux uses this trick that, remember, our page table entries had a bunch of byte bits that weren't used. It stores that information in those extra bits, but where it put it on disk. And this is why, when I printed out the mappings of the file of cat, Linux was keeping track that this came from bin cat. So if Linux needs to load it, it knows how to do that. And in Linux, they just have a list of structs basically representing each of these mappings, pointing to the files they come from, so they can do this lookup from virtual address to where it is on disk. So another thing we need to do is when we choose a page to replace, we need to figure out how we're going to choose a page to replace. We also, once we choose that, we're going to need to figure out how to remove what's in the page we're freeing up. Right? I need to figure out how I can take something that's cached and put it back on disk. So how do I do that? Well, this is going to mean I need some way of undoing the process of having it mapped. And there's an important issue that it might be in a page table, and I need to unmap it from page tables. And that was kind of sort of a given when I showed the examples earlier, that I just removed it from the page table, but that's not actually going to be that trivial to do, because it could be mapped in multiple processes. Like if there's 10 copies of cat running, 10 of them could have page table entries pointing to part of the cache data for cat. If we want to remove that from memory, we need to modify all 10 of those page tables. We need to find all 10 of those page tables. So if we're removing a physical page to disk, we need to figure out all the page tables that are you pointing to it, and all the other things that are pointing to it, and get rid of them. And this means we're going to have some data structures that give us a mapping in the other direction. We're going to have a way of taking a physical page and looking up what page tables is it in. We're going to have a way of taking a physical page and figuring out what file does it belong to, so I can mark it as not being part of that cached file anymore. And also so I can figure out how to write it back to disk. So we're going to have some way of figuring this out. And in Linux, this means that Linux actually keeps a big data structure for every physical page with a list about every cached file and every page table that uses it, just so they could do this lookup. So far I got to, how do I make sure I can actually remove the page from memory? Make sure no one else is using it anymore by getting rid of it from those forward mappings. I talked about loading the more important data, but I need to talk about how do I choose what page. So we're also going to need some information about how pages are being used in order to make a reasonable choice of what page to choose. So we have to choose something that isn't going to be used much. And our next big topic is going to be, how do we figure out what's not going to be used much? And kind of like scheduling, we're going to have some sort of goals in what we choose. And the primary goal I'm going to talk about is going to be hit rate, minimizing the number of cache misses, minimizing the number of times I need to load something from disk or similar. This is not quite the same as maximizing performance, because loading some things is simpler than loading others. Like allocating a new zeroed page is faster than loading it from disk. Loading from an SSD is faster than loading from a hard drive. Right? We aren't going to consider those sorts of issues. And Also, I'm going to ignore, for the most part, though some OSs consider it, fairness. Like, maybe I want to make sure each program gets equal use of the cache. I'm going to ignore that issue. And we're going to talk about optimizing hit rate. We're going to talk about optimizing hit rate because it's close to optimizing throughput. And also, we're going to start by talking about doing this in a way we're going to be entirely reactive. So I'm just going to say, when I need to access a file, I'm going to do what I need to do to load it and unload whatever else. In practice, OSs can do better than that because we can sort of do things in advance of the programs needing memory. So one thing we can do, for example, is we can say, oh, you're just starting cat. Let me start loading cat for you, even though you haven't started executing all of that code. We can just load that in advance. And this is something OSs do. We can also say, if you write to a file, let's write that out right away, because I know I'm going to need to write it out eventually, rather than waiting until I need to use that memory for something else. We'll get back to this later, but for now, we're only going to assume we're being reactive. We're not going to do the things that would improve performance of trying to like predict what the program will do and do things before it needs memory. So next time, we'll talk about the best possible page replacement algorithm for hit rate, which is called Bilady's Min. I have the policy here. We'll look at that next time. And if you think about this policy, you might say, we can't actually do that. We'll talk about that too.